1 year ago today, Auburn fires Brian Harsin. And oh, what a year it has been since. We're going to talk about it. I want to thank everybody for listening to today's episode of the Auburn Daily Podcast. Whether you are checking it out where you get your podcast or on YouTube, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Joining us today, kind of back on a regular rotation, is our guy Pat Barnes, the fighter of the bad narrative, Auburn's vigilante, Auburn's hall monitor. Whether you're on the interwebs or the message boards or just crossing ways on the work path, and you got a bad take, Pat Barnes is after you. He's joining us here once again to go and attack those on the wavelengths as well. A whole new platform. But as always, you want to thank Pat for joining the show. And we're going to get right into this. We're going to get right into what this year has been like with Brian Harsin. But before we get there, it would not be right if we did not highlight a little bit of the good news. You were at the Auburn Mississippi State football game. It was a little hot, unseasonably hot, at least for the first half for sure. But we got through it. So before we reflect on the wild year that had been since Auburn had had a unprecedented midseason firing of Brian Harsin after the Arkansas loss of 2022, let's just get a high note. Let's get everybody's moods up. Give me your feels of the Auburn Mississippi State game, Pat.
Well, we finally got to see the Peyton Thorne we all thought we were going to get to see this year. So that, I feel like that's got to be number one. That's the most exciting thing from the past weekend. Number two, I don't know who was calling the offense, but whoever was calling the offense started calling some stuff that we've been asking to see, stretching the field horizontally, quick passes to the hitches that we were running, a lot more running up the middle and running with a purpose. So I saw two very good things this past weekend we've all been kind of dying to see this year.
It was incredibly refreshing. And I said this on the last episode, but this was the Peyton Thorne that I thought myself and a lot of people were really expecting to see against Cal. And I think this game, really, if we had just like changed the location and the uniforms, I think we'd have felt awesome if this was against Cal. Just a very much a just come out gunslinging the first half and just take care of the business, slow it down, get out of there in the second half. And I said it in the last episode, I'm going to say it right here. It was better late than never. I think we were ecstatic to see it. I think with the upcoming schedule with Vanderbilt being Vanderbilt, Arkansas looking like they have just about near given up, and they're going to have a really tough game with Florida this weekend, I think it really goes well for Auburn to kind of stack the momentum. We always knew this middle part of the season was going to be tough. I think the offensive woes just made it a little bit tough. It was weird because the scores outside of LSU were all relatively close, but it was just that offensive production made it feel so much worse than the score. But the good news is history will just remember those scores. History will remember the atmosphere. I think when we look back, that won't feel as bad if we can take care of business these next few games. And I would say at worst, just make it competitive with Alabama and just don't do what you did against LSU against them, which I don't think the cards are stacked for Bama to do that. And who knows if they lose to LSU this weekend and they don't really have playoff or SEC hopes, who knows what their morale is going to look like coming to this game either.
Right.
As many thought this really could be the turnaround, and it was definitely a lot better than the alternative option had been, whether Auburn had lost or had a close, just ugly win with Mississippi State. But I think wasn't perfect, but for the most part, it was improved enough where I think we can all feel better. Is that a fair synopsis?
Definitely, and I think you referred to Thorne as a gunslinger. I wouldn't necessarily even refer to him as a gunslinger, but they were calling passes that were easier to throw, where he could make quicker decisions, and he was getting the ball to the receivers efficiently. Like that first throw of the game he had to Burton was perfect, I thought. You just gave him a quick 10 yards out to where he could put it on a fast guy in space, the way that cornerback was giving him so much cushion. We've been asking to see that stuff all year.
Amen.
And we finally got a bunch of it this past weekend.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm no analyst, I'm no pro here, but I you're right. When you said everybody'd been expecting to see it, it was this, please just do some easy throws, get him confident, get the receivers confident, get everybody in rhythm, and then just kind of roll it from there. And it just seems like that, as you kind of said, we hadn't really had a whole lot of that, or if it felt like they would abandon it. Because I remember, you know, you had those bam-bam, you had those quick throws to Camden Brown a few weeks ago, and there's like they just never went back to him, and it was like, oh, slant, he got it, all right, let's go. And then it was nice to just to see him get it and keep it rolling. I think that adjusted percentage was like 91%. He finally was throwing the ball away. I mean, he legitimately looked like a completely different quarterback. Now, he's got to do it away from home, and he's going to do it against good opponents. So this is a sign of good things to come, but this does not necessarily mean it is a complete turnaround, just to kind of put everything in perspective. But it gives you hope that maybe, like I said, it was better late than never, but there is something there to build upon. Overall, I think we feel good about how this went down. You took care of business. You beat Mississippi State how you did. You didn't get fancy with it. Everybody stayed healthy. On to Vanderbilt.
And a lot of it can be attributed to, like we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, there was a steep drop in a talent we were going up against this past weekend. And that's going to kind of hold true for the next 3 weeks as well. So you're hoping, with that in mind, that the new and improved offense with a more confident Peyton Thorne combined with going against less talented defenses, we see a lot of the same in the next 3 weeks, I would think.
Yeah, Vegas has it to where Auburn, if you split the spread, Auburn should beat Vanderbilt somewhere in the mid to high 30s, or Vanderbilt's probably somewhere in the teens.
We're a 13.5-point favorite last I saw.
So I think the spread, you have to be rounding because you can't factor in half points for a total score, was something around 18 to 32 if you were to take it by Vegas math. So if Auburn, let's say Auburn beats that by a little bit and Vanderbilt goes backwards, I mean, I think this could be that fun game, unless, you know, Auburn's decide, say, we're going to play it conservative and just get out of here. I mean, this could be that 30-something to 10-13 game that I think would everybody be like, all right, you know, we're feeling good. And then if Arkansas gets blown out by Florida, I think Auburn can roll up there and really do some damage, get right with New Mexico State, and just see how Bama's looking and maybe put on some boxing gloves to get a game. I think that's what everybody'd hope for, get a good bowl game. And then from here, I think after this game too, after that win, I think your statistical chances of getting a bowl game, very, very good. And like I said, if they roll out of there 7-5, everybody's feeling a lot better about this. By some, I'm not going to say miracle, because that makes it, we don't get team of destiny here, but if they do scrap their way into go at 8-4, then I think everybody's really, really celebrating a great season turnaround. Because that would mean a victory against Bama.
As we sit here today, a successful season for me is winning the next three games and putting a respectable showing against Bama. That's my – if we do that, it will be a successful season in my book.
And I want to add – I agree with you 100%. I want to add one more caveat to that. I want to see some younger guys, and we're already starting to see it, but I think what you need to see is, you know, future. Like your Connor Liu, your Burtons, your guys like that, some younger guys starting to make some plays, start to show some flashes and be like, could run with this. This guy could be him next year. We could run with this. So, and I think with the way the schedule plays out with the talent gaps, everything that I think you most definitely have the makings to do that. So that is kind of where it's at right now. I wanted to take a little bit of just to start this episode with a lot of optimism and happiness before we kind of get into the meat of it following the title. So we're recording this on Halloween, October 31st, 2023. Did anything happen October 31st, 2022? And ironically, it is Nick Saban's birthday. So what a more perfect time to ruin Nick Saban's time at Alabama than firing his favorite coach from Auburn, maybe?
Top 10 happiest moments in my life, I think, is when I got the ESPN alert on my phone while I was out at lunch that day saying Auburn had fired Brian Harsin. So, yes, this is a day that I'll always remember in an extremely positive light.
Yeah, no, I think Halloween will mean just mean a little bit extra for Auburn fans for here on out, just from what that was. So I want to give a quick little take how I saw it. I want to give you a little bit of take of sort of how you saw it this. And I remember as I was shooting the games and I was, you know, doing the filming and all that. And I just remember, you know, post game, the players had like even after Penn State and even after Missouri, I mean, there were people that were really like, all right, you know, Auburn was one field goal and or I think it was like a holding or pass interference call and or guy dropping the ball at the 1-inch line away from Brian Harsin potentially getting fired after that game. Didn't happen, of course. Got just absolutely boat raced by Penn State. But the players after the game, the coaches, everybody, there was like this kind of optimism, like, hey, you know, we got it. We got things we got to work on, but we can definitely turn this thing around. We can get right. More so than I would have expected, kind of given everything that was going on then. But that Arkansas game, after they had gotten beat and beat and beat, there was a mood after that game to where the players came in and it looks like every single one of them just watched their dog got run over. And they just seemed so defeated. There was just every positive emotion. It was like a Dementor was just in there just sucking all the happiness and joy out of them, but they just didn't pass out. They just had to kind of script their coach speak answers. You could just tell, like, uh-oh, this is done. These players, I'm not them, so I'm not going to say, hey, they have given up. But that mood felt like maybe this could follow where they were at in that moment. I just remember seeing Owen Papo, and he just was so just – his eyes were just glossed over. You could just tell he was so dejected after that game. And that had to have been a pretty good mood of the locker room at the time. And I want to say that that press conference, it took Brian Harsin like quite some time to even like show up. And it was just a, it was, well, just
he had to get a bench session in, I'm sure, beforehand.
There was just this whole ordeal and mood, and you can go back and watch some of those. I'm not that anybody's going to do this. No one wants to relive this, but I mean, you can go back and watch those player interviews that that are filmed in the locker room afterward, and you can just hear just how defeated the guy sounded. And that was after that Arkansas game, and that's where you just really. And it's funny because we go back to this word hope, because you know that was Alan Green's buzzword when they let Gus go. Is, well, we let Gus go because I think I'm paraphrasing here, but correct me if. There's a little bit of it, but there's no hope. We felt like there was no hope. We needed hope. And ironically, looking back, you know, Brian Harsin was supposed to be, I'm videoing here in quotes, that hope. But I would wholeheartedly say that moment after that Arkansas game, and really before, but I mean, that was just the antithesis of it. There was no hope in that program. There was just, I mean, everybody, fans, everybody was done saying, we can't, there's no way we can keep doing this anymore. Not at the pace we're going. And then, of course, I mean, that really forced the hand. They had to let Harsin go that next day, I believe. Or, sorry, it wasn't the next day, because I thought it would be that Sunday, and it didn't happen. Everyone's scratching their head like, this is wild. And at this point, the media has just full-blown turn. Everybody is just reporting madness. And then, of course, probably midday, lunchtime, brunch time. It was sometime between, like, 10:45 and, like, 1:30.
I typically eat lunch between 11:30 and 1, so I think it was like right at 11:45.
It was somewhere lunchtime. Boom. They get the call. They make the call. They announce it. He's out of there. And I mean, it was just, it was like the Star Wars reaction when the Death Star blew up for the universe. Like, oh my gosh, we're back. And then, you know, you get the John Cohen hire coming after that. It's like, we feel like we're rolling. And you talk about just content. Everybody is glued to everything. Who's going to be the next coach? Who's going to be next AD? Who's going to be interim? And the rumors and world just start flying. I was actually in Auburn at the time, and it was Halloween. And I was actually trying to do a whole bunch of work, do some finance stuff, get some taxes all crunched in the spreadsheets. And I was just like, not getting a thing done today. We're just going to be glued to the internet. That is how I remember that sequence of events. Now, I want to go up to you and kind of start around the same time I did and kind of give to your, I'm not going to say rise and downfall, but more of like downfall to rock bottom to just complete exit from Auburn.
So my negativity started way before yours, which I was saying
the exit. I wouldn't go that far back. I just meant like the final letdown of where you were. In the final hours of Harsin. Yeah. We're not going that far yet. We'll get there, but no.
I come from a different perspective for you. I'm a longtime message board poster. So everybody on the message boards was a matter of when, not if, this fire was going to happen. So I had once that Missouri game happened, I honestly thought he was going to get fired the next day. So I know we won that game, but let's be honest, out of all the Auburning things that have happened over the last decade plus, the fact that we won that game may be even more crazy than the prayer in Jordan Hare itself. We had no business winning that game.
Auburn lost that game three times over and still won.
Yeah, really nothing we did to win that game, we still managed to win it. I thought it was going to be fired that next day, but they kept him around a few more weeks. So it really wasn't a I knew he was going to be fired from that game on, really from the Penn State game on. It was just a matter of when, and that was just more of like a culmination of my anticipation of the 6-7 weeks prior.
Well, remember, that was the bye week. Everybody was kind of circling that bye week and is like, are they going to do it here and there? Because that was the thing, because it was like, all right, well, let's let them get through Ole Miss. There's a bye week, and then that way we can kind of get a new regime established, have some time, and then you got a home game against Arkansas. And they didn't do it on the bye week, which in hindsight probably would have been a little bit better. So I think that's when everyone was like, okay, well, if they didn't do it here, they're just going to let them take the L for the season, because you didn't want to do that to Zach. At the time, you know, Zach Etheridge was the hot rumored to be the interim coach. Like, well, you don't want to do that to him. It's already done. You know, what do you do there? Just let him just swallow all the lumps for the season and then take it. But like I said, that Arkansas game was just so bad. You're just like, all right, we got
to see. I don't even remember that game being that much different from the other games previously. I guess that's what's different for me is, like, you're talking about how rejected the players felt after that game, but
it was different.
Go ahead.
No.
It was the same type of game I had seen the 5-6 weeks prior to that. I mean, you could even see on the two games we won early in the year, like, we were not a good team. And it was once we played Penn State, Penn State's a top 10 caliber team, beat us like they should have. And then we played a bunch of teams that were kind of around our talent level. And we were a poorly coached team, and they were better coached teams, and they beat us like they should have.
What the difference was for that game was being there in person. And like I said, I already kind of went into just the mood of the players and just, you know, you see guys walking off the field and there's just no, like I said, there's all the wind is out of their sails. You can just see it in their eyes. And then the other part of that was the fans. That place cleared out so early and so fast. I remember I'm sitting there and there, I can overhear some police officers joking about how they're like, uh-oh, we need to get ready. There might be people who try to storm the field, because there was all of probably like a couple thousand people left. And this is like midway through the fourth quarter. I was actually going through some pictures of last year's game, and I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh, that's how empty the stadium was. And there was still a whole lot of game left. And that's where it just really felt like no matter what, no one even just the fans don't even want to be here to see this. It was that, I mean, students, everybody was just, all right, we're out of here. And I think that's why that game felt, man, they're booging, man. They had some hope, I guess. But I think that's why, oh man, silent mode, man, good job.
It's off now.
All right, good. And I think that's why I just felt so different. Now, granted, you know, you had the away games before that. I think people are kind of hyped up for LSU. So had you had Ole Miss at home, probably would have felt that way. Because you had Missouri, and then you had everybody hyped for LSU. And then it was like, all right, we're going to do this one last rodeo in Arkansas. Kind of everybody's dragging their feet in there. And it went exactly, as you said, it went exactly how it was expected to go. And that was the problem. It went exactly how everybody expected it to go. I mean, probably just worse. I mean, it felt like it was just a team and everything was just yuck. And yeah, I mean, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
I took a – this is me probably admitting too much.
Okay.
I took a modicum of – I wouldn't call it pleasure, but I would say that I kind of – Every loss that mounted last year until we fired Harsin, it didn't bother me too much, because in my mind it was everybody getting what they deserved when they begged and pleaded with the people not to fire them in February. So it was more the losses when we had Harsin didn't affect me too. The first loss that affected me last year was that loss against Mississippi State. I really wanted Cadillac to win that game right off.
Yeah,
the bat.
He should have.
Yeah, he should have. If it was McPherson playing that game and not Anders Crossman, would have. So,
yeah, how I want to kind of go into this here, I want to, and I'll let you kind of handle this one, because I think you will most definitely be able to jubilantly and accurately describe the downfall of just how it happened. We've already hit on the kind of the immediate, and then I want to kind of talk about the year since, because I think that's the interesting part of just kind of where Auburn has come in a year. And then we can even kind of hint at what it was like the year prior. So I'm going to kind of give the floor to you here. Give us an abridged version of the, I'm not going to say initially the rise of Harsin, because I don't know if there ever was any rise, just minus like getting the job, but just where did it start going downhill and when did it just absolutely start plummeting to where it picked up to where we just started with the Arkansas Ole Miss bye week time?
Well, you can't see me, but as you were saying that, where did it start going downhill? I just started smiling to myself because it started going. I remember having my first thoughts that we may have made a mistake hiring this guy in June before he even coached his first game. Because if anybody that was following recruiting at that time could see how different, and when I say different, how poorly recruiting was being handled compared to even Gus, definitely Chizik before that. I was 9 years old, 8 years old when we hired Tuberville, so I can't say how he came out of the gates as far as a recruiter goes. But you could see that he had kind of stepped into a world that he was not prepared for that first summer before he even coached a game when it comes to recruiting. And as we've talked about in the past, talent acquisition in college football is 75-80% of the battle. If you're not doing that right, you really have no hope for the future being a good football program as far as being the top-tier SEC team goes. So I kind of started having my doubts in the summer, but I wanted to give him time, and I wanted to see if he could turn it around, adapt, and get better. Obviously, the first, however, 8-9 games of the 2021 season were pretty good. We had a good quarterback.
Minus Georgia State.
Yeah, minus Georgia State. I was at a wedding for that one, so I didn't get – I watched bits and pieces of it, thankfully. So I didn't get – that one didn't land as heavily as it did with some other people for me. But, you know, when we had Bo Nix, and Bo Nix definitely improved his junior year here. I don't know if that was Harsin or Bobo or some combination thereof, or just the fact that he was a third-year player. But he improved, and Auburn got better as the year went on until he got hurt. And then it kind of went downhill from there. And I was still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt there because, you know, there's not a lot of teams that can really manage well having their starting quarterback go down middle of the year. And there's not a lot of teams that have a great second string ready to go behind him. What really killed me on Harsin was that month of January in 2023, where, you know, the 2023 class in Alabama, the recruiting class. January 2022. And I say 2023 because it was the 2023 recruiting class that he was getting ready for. And that month starts, and Auburn basketball is rolling. And we've got these packed down arenas, and it would be a fantastic opportunity to bring some of these recruits in that you've got to start landing to show, hey, this is an Auburn atmosphere for a basketball game. Can you imagine what it's going to be like for a football game when we're good? And I think Harsin, they didn't host a single recruit during the Auburn-Kentucky basketball game. Didn't host a single recruit. The weekend after that, it's junior day.
Like I said, remember, that's the basketball game where the students were camping out all night, hundreds of them.
Yes.
It was cold. They brought the food. I mean, it was incredibly electric as far as just the atmosphere, the morale, the hype, that all thing was Auburn. That was Jabari. That was Walker. That was fighting for that number one basketball ranking. That right. is what the time period we're talking about.
The weekend following that, I believe, it was supposed to be Auburn's junior day where they're supposed to host all these 2023 players. There was already 20-plus 4- or 5-star players in the state of Alabama for that year. Auburn got two of them on campus, two of the 4- and 5-star players, in-state players in Alabama. At that point, for me, it was obvious that this was heading nowhere fast. Immediately following that, you have late signing day. And what do you do on late signing day? Do you remember?
Late signing day, that was the optimistic feeling that he, because I remember it was like, all right, there's some linemen he may grab. There were some other key position groups. I can't remember off the top of my head. Maybe it's just a while back. Maybe the memory is blocked. But I remember that it was a little bit of a goose egg. Am I correct?
You are correct. And it wasn't like he missed on one or two players. I think we were still in it for 5 or 6 guys. Every single one of those guys went somewhere else. And that was after he took almost the entire month of January off recruiting. Do you know what he did immediately going 0-for in recruiting on Lake Signing Day?
Trip to Mexico, is that correct?
Yeah. What other job in America can you do something that badly, that poorly, and you decide you're going to take a week and a long, half-long trip to Mexico after that? I don't know of a job where you can get away with that. And people want to talk at the end about last February about how big of a mess Auburn had stepped in. It wasn't because of his results in season one that Auburn tried to fire him in February. It was because he followed up a 6-7 season with doing absolutely nothing and putting zero effort into recruiting from when early signing day ended all the way to a month and a half later at late signing day. That's why Auburn tried to fire him in February. For whatever reason, they didn't pull the trigger. They couldn't pull the trigger, and we were stuck with him another year. But I think for everybody that was paying attention to recruiting during those months, you kind of understood this guy was not going to work here because he wasn't willing to put in the effort for the most important factor of being a college football team. He just was unwilling to put in that effort that's required to get to that level.
And then, of course, there was a little bit of We're going to stick with a little bit. There was some rallying behind Harsin after all that February.
It was a lot of people that were behind him.
There was some rallying there, and I think the problem was because, unfortunately, we're not going to delve into any details of this, but we'll just say the word rumors. There were a lot of rumors that swirled around him at the time about him personally. And I think what ended up happening is a lot of people were ignoring some of the tangible facts about coaching performance, overshadowed with stuff that was maybe rumored malicious about his character and things like that outside of coaching. And I think because of that there was a lot of people that really kind of stood behind him and maybe ignored some of the other stuff with recruiting and this and that and on the coaching performance, et cetera, because those storylines were just juicier and gossipier and overshadowed. Hey, that stuff doesn't matter. Look at the junior day. Look at the signing day. Look at all these other things. And it was just easier to ignore some of that other stuff because it was like, hey, we didn't feel like this was right. And really, probably a lot of that was not right to be as big as it was. And like I said, we're not going to get any more into it here because it's completely irrelevant. But there was a rallying behind Harsin once the dust all settled from the whole February situation. And for the most part, Auburn folks were behind. And this is where it kind of really gets me is like, okay, you've gotten a second wind of rally momentum. You come into media days. I thought he did very well with media days. You've got some hype around the program. You got some new guys in there. You're saying the right things. How could we forget the Austin Davis debacle too? That was a whole nother thing that went into that.
Well, man, I was about to bring up, you got that. You've got half of the guys that Gus brought in the last couple of years, I think, left that winter. I think somebody posted on one of the boards earlier today that I think 25 players transferred out that winter. Mm-hmm. And some of those guys were good players. Like I know I caught a bunch of crap for being upset that Kobe Hunson transferred. The guy is killing it at UCF right now. He would easily be the number one receiver on this team if he was still here.
Tennyson, another one.
Yeah, Ladarius Tennyson, J.J. Pegues, like we lost some really good players that winter. Everybody kind of brushed it off as we're just like culling the herd, we're trimming the fat, and you can't lose SEC talent these were four stars that were living up to the hype, and he was letting them walk out the door. Exactly.
And so you said you had good momentum, and then obviously there were people who. I think yourself included, who very much just like gritting their teeth, like get it gone. And very much is like, dude on the field. And to me, the way I had described it since then, I said, Harsin has a window for success. And there's these milestones he's got to hit to either keep it as wide as it is, or even widen it by doing the right things. And you kind of kept getting these milestones. And it was just like, okay. It was getting narrower and narrower. And then I think the biggest one was like, Big Cat Weekend, where that just guys you were supposed to commit and recruit since you had momentum for that just weren't really panning out. So, all right, missed on that guy. Oh, okay, that should have been a gimme. Oh, there's a lineman we're not getting. We need some line here. Okay, reports. Big Cat Weekend was kind of in hindsight.
Why we were missing on those guys though?
Explain for the listeners.
And this will kind of tie into what you want to talk about as far as where the difference in what we've seen with Hugh Freeze this year. The on-the-field stuff, truthfully, matters a lot less to recruits than a lot of people think it does. Had he even put in half the amount of effort that was required, we probably would have recruited on an average Auburn level, because they were doing a lot of on the field stuff right as far as building a program goes. The simple fact of the matter is Harsin refused and was never going to put in the effort that was required to be a good recruiter in the SEC. He thought he was above it, left it to his staff. The way you know that, even with just besides the results that panned out, is when his dad called in the Feinbaum and was going on a spiel about, you know, Auburn can't land 5- and 4-star players that Alabama and Georgia want. They have to get 3 stars, diamonds in the roughs, and turn them into better players. Hugh Freeze has already done that 3 or 4 players this year with a less talented roster and like we've said, a poor showing on the field the last 4 weeks, and recruiting momentum still picking up. That's because he puts in the effort and the time. That is a bare minimum requirement for a successful head football coach at Auburn, is that you put in the effort and the time at being a great recruiter.
And that was kind of where I was, the segue there of getting to the milestones, the effort, the things that were getting there, just, it was kind of a little bit more urgent. Like, all right, we're instead of, you know, driving through a wide open tunnel, we're now having to shoot the wings off of a fly from 100 yards away. That the margin for success has just gotten so tight now. And that's really where it was. So where it was, the only thing is like the only thing they had left to do was to do it on the field. And of course, we know how that went, very much evident after Penn State was like, I would even say San Jose State, because I mean, they played that game really, really tight. And then, maybe they're looking, optimistic. Oh, they're just looking ahead to Penn State, got blown out. And of course, from there, the writing on the wall, just like you said, I mean, it was very much a matter of not if, but when, and we know how that panned out. So that is kind of the Harsin saga in a nutshell. It's been 1 year, and oh, what a year it has been. So let's close it out with this. So we kind of went over Harsin's year previously, up until his firing. We went over a lot of what he did wrong, which inevitably led to him getting let go when he did, and in a very unprecedented way with very unprecedented results, given the resources he had. The crazy part is, too, is the fact that they locked down that football facility from letting him get in it. You remember they postponed opening that for a month?
Yeah, good call.
Just so he couldn't even show recruits or get into that. So, and of course, Cadillac took over as interim and honestly had some of the just best memories that I think any Auburn fan, at least who's alive right now, will remember for a team that didn't make a bowl game in those short few week windows. I mean, of course, that A&M game was, it's crazy to think that you could think of a game from a year that a team didn't make a bowl as being like, that is legitimately an all-time, like, memorable Auburn game. Just him coming out of the tunnel, that whole deal. And I mean, and that I think is a really special thing, and I'm glad that fans, I mean, that stadium was packed out for that, and just everything about that entire night was awesome, minus maybe the gameplay and the stats and how cold it was. But just the energy was electric, and it was awesome to see fans rally with that, which really gets us up to where Hugh Freeze is. So Thanksgiving weekend, or after Thanksgiving weekend, after the Iron Bowl, Hugh Freeze is hired, I think, that Monday or Tuesday after. So we're about a month away from the Hugh Freeze hiring. So I guess we'll have to do another episode here of a year of Freeze when we get there, about another month. But we'll kind of preview that a little bit. And let's say, so that was Harsin, his bad time, his inevitable, just never-ending spiral downward. What differences did Hugh Freeze make in that relative the same time, given, I guess, some of the same mess that Harsin had? And why did that direction go differently for Hugh in year one than it did for Brian in year 1.5?
I don't know if we've talked about this before. Do you know what Hugh Freeze did the night after he had his press conference at Auburn and was officially hired?
I don't believe so.
He went to the Chilton County High School basketball game to watch DeMarcus Riddick play a basketball game. That's what he did the night he was hired at Auburn. DeMarcus Riddick at the time was committed to Georgia. Do you know where he's committed right now?
Where's he committed right now?
Auburn University.
There we go. How many stars are beside his name?
Depends on what site you're on. I think he's a consensus 5-star. If he's not, he's a very high consensus 4-star linebacker. My point there is Hugh Freeze is already a more successful coach, even if it doesn't pan out on the field this year. He will leave Auburn in a better spot than Harsin did because he is putting the time and the effort in to making Auburn a better place. Harsin wasn't doing that in the area that it most requires it. Hugh Freeze is doing that.
And there was a quote that a lot of people went around, and it was a quote slash question. Did Brian Harsin leave Auburn better than he found it? And I think the overwhelming answer to that is absolutely not. That's
the easiest question of all time. Everybody can say that confidently.
But you look back at all the coaches that came to Auburn previously. I'm not going to go as far back to Barfield because that's just so many differences and factors here. But we'll say from Dye up. Yes, all these coaches left Auburn better than they got it. And I mean, you could maybe have some debates of the kind of the Bowden situation. But just given kind of where Auburn was when he took over, it's kind of just a whole weird bag there. But Tuberville, Gus.
I don't know about Gus. Gus, we can have that debate for another day. But Auburn was a stable program when Gus left, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it had a high floor. And the only reason I'm just going to give a little asterisk on that is because, and we've talked about this a lot, we won't get into it here, we'll definitely get into this more offseason. But just the fact that he left during COVID kind of had everything in a weird limbo period. And obviously, roster-wise, there were some problems in the recruiting situation, there were some problems. But Gus took over a team that the year before had 3 wins. It had national championship caliber and brought him back up there and raised the floor to roughly an 8 win team.
Yeah. We can talk we could talk about, like I said, we can really delve into this to another day. I would say that Gus took over a more talented team than the one he left.
Yeah, oh, that's 100% fair. But anyway, yeah, so back to Hugh and the Messes. Sorry, we got too sidetracked.
Yeah.
Tune into this content later. Off-season talk. Pat.
I thought you were about to say something.
No. This is all you. I said back to the mess that Hugh had to clean up.
So he walked into the least talented Auburn team, I think, since when Dye walked into Auburn. That's the mess that he walked into. He has already done a ton to try to correct that. We brought in some transfers. A lot of them have been at least SEC average players this year. Some of them haven't. But one thing he has done really well is recruit the heck out of some high school talent, which is still how you build a truly successful program. And the 2024 class, that's the class we're in right now, it's looking good. We got a shot at a top 10 class. Couldn't even sniff that with Harsin the last couple of years. The year after that, it's looking even better than that. There's a potential for that to be a top 5 class if we close with some of the players they're talking about closing with. Not even delving into any of the on-field stuff, the off-field stuff has improved tremendously in just 1 year. And we can have a lot of hope for the future just based off that.
Well, one thing, too, that we hadn't hit on yet about Hugh or Brian was the fit of the coach. I think we've hit a lot about on the field, on the staff, the X's and O's, but more about the personality, the figurehead that it takes to be a coach at this level. Cause I mean, it's so much more about being a CEO and a networker. And as I kind of said, a figurehead of the program rather than just a guy out there who holds a clipboard and blows a whistle. And that was always kind of Harsin's thing, is he was very much kind of this counterculture, like, you know, hard nose my way against the world. And I think with this, all the stop steal stuff, it was kind of like, yeah, we like the guy who's against the man. You know, he's this tough, kind of hard nosed, like going to get it done, work hard, work guy. And he said all these things, but obviously the results, it was words, no results. And Hugh, two different things as far as fit of just not bucking the people that you need to buck, embracing the culture, seeming like you want to be in a place and actually happy and humble to be there. And then also just being very transparent and candid with just the media and the people around him to just, I'm going to say this very bluntly, but just being a guy that people can like.
Yep.
Absolutely. And that is, yeah. And that is not what you heard with Harsin so much, especially, we'll put it this way, especially with the people that mattered. And there were a lot of narratives out there about, oh, he was this awful, awful guy, da, da, da. And I talked to some people too that had interacted with him and were like, there were definitely people he did not like, but he was pleasant with a lot of people as well. But the issue there is there were people that were important and there were people that mattered that he made no effort to win those relationships. And that was the problem. It wasn't like he was like this with every single person in existence, but there's some people you got to play the game with to make your life a lot easier. And there were just times where Harsin had no intent on doing that. And fundamentally, to run a machine like this, that's part of the game that you got to play. And you got to play the game just as much off the field as you do on the field. And it goes to show, I mean, Harsin might go somewhere again, another small program, and do the X's and O's things very well and win some games. And be like, okay, he's fundamentally not a bad football coach. But maybe
that's not what Auburn needs there.
Right, yeah, but maybe he's just not a guy, because at this level, it's so much more than that. You can be a great coach and coach well at a high school or small college, but there's so much more about – and this can sound kind of crazy, but you're almost about near better off being an average coach but an incredible businessman and people person at this level.
Oh, 100%.
And that's what I think, because the key is, as a people person, you can hire great assistant coaches to do that side of it.
Yep.
And you can – get the money, people, and the fans, and then just everybody on board to make the program run. But if you can't do that stuff and you're great with X's and O's, well, you're not gonna win those necessary battles. And I think Brian Harsin to Hugh Freeze is a incredible polarizing example of just how important that is and why fit is. And as the game evolves, and as there's so much more money with TV contracts and fans and boosters and just all these things you got to do with players and NIL and just so many more moving parts, you've got to have that CEO mentality, that businessman mentality, along with the coach standpoint. And that's why these guys get paid the big bucks. And that's also why they're expected the big results. And Brian Harsin got paid some pretty big bucks and got paid some pretty big bucks to walk away, but didn't do it. And I think there's possibly a scenario here, and this could be another offseason topic, about have we just gone absolutely bonkers with some of these coaching contracts? Because I overheard, I think it was a Village Vice with Zach Blackerby and Brad Law, were talking about that. I think they had said that Pittman's contract has a clause, correct me if you know this, that it goes down. If he wins less than 50%, his buyout is drastically reduced.
Yeah, but I think that is true. But I think there's a little bit more nuance to that came out today. I don't think that goes into effect till the end of this year or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't skimmed into that yet either. I just kind of heard a deal, and I agree. It's definitely something for future worth researching. But I think there's some validity to having coaching contracts. It's like, if you just absolutely suck, like, you're not getting this buyout money. Which
I'm trying to get that Brian Ferentz contract for everybody. If you don't score 25 points a game, you're fired. That's it.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna do it today because I could debate some contract stuff and just how we'll just end with this. Jimmy Sexton is a wizard.
Yes, agreed.
And what he has done, and honestly, how much money he has cost Auburn.
Yeah,
astounding. But I mean, even when they're just whispers. I mean, it could have been just one message board post on the Arkansas side that, oh, you know, we're wanting to fire Pittman. All of a sudden, poof, Gus Malzahn's getting an extension at UCF after getting demolished, or right around the time he got demolished by Baylor. It's just like, what is this world? So, yeah, good for – I mean, the real winner every time a coach gets fired and hired and extended is Jimmy Sexton. So, this is for any young entrepreneurial, business-minded, sports-loving person listening to the show – go into sports, become a sports agent. That's where the money's at. So, Pat, that's all I got. Do you have any more final thoughts for this past year and for what to you is a celebratory anniversary?
I'm in a good spot right now, man. Like I said, I've got the coach I wanted. We're coming off a win. Hoping we can get another win this weekend, keep this thing rolling. So everything's sunny in my world right now.
Well, I'm going to say this. It's a lot sunnier than it was 1 year ago. Before we close out, I do want to thank our show sponsor, Opelika Rage Room. That would have been a great place in Auburn around this time last year. If you got some rage, you just want to have fun, do something different, go there. It's exactly how it sounds. Located outside downtown Opelika, 2nd Avenue. get a table full of breakables. You get bats, hammers, you get electronics, glassware, bottles, whatever it is. Get a smash on the table, throw it against the wall, smash on the floor, whatever you like. Just have fun. Be safe. You can go to the website uplikearageroom.com to book a session up to 12 people, or you can go by yourself. So group sizes 1 to 12 at a time. They also have a splatter room, which can house up to 10 people. Giant paint fight. Great for all ages, date nights, families, whatever it may be. Birthdays especially. It is a blast. They also have a location in Birmingham as well. Birmingham Rage Room. Check them out as well. On their website, book, do all the same stuff, exact same activities. Both locations are a blast. I want to thank them again for sponsoring the show. And once again, too, I want to thank Pat for guesting on the show. This is normally the part where we tell everybody where to find them, but Batman does not take off his masks. I saw Pat out there posting, attacking some people with some ridiculousness. Is that what he's doing? It's what he does. And he'll be continuing that. Like I said, if you guys are out there with some of these ridiculous takes, he'll find you. He'll be on it. I want to thank him again for joining the show. I want to thank you, the listener, for checking us out. We'll be back on a regular schedule again. Won't be traveling so much. Won't be, obviously got some away games. I was in Auburn a lot, so we kind of had some, we had our normal show guests were traveling too. So our episode launch schedule got a little out of whack. It'll be a lot more normal this week, and it should be for the next few weeks moving forward. So thank you guys for listening. Check us out tomorrow.